So, American Horror Story is back on TV, but if you favor a different kind of freak show, a freak show of truth, if you will, then this is the show for you. I'm Leslie Gornstein. Welcome to a spanking new edition of my Femme Fatale podcast, in which I peel back the layers of Hollywood and get to the truth each and every week just for you. You send me questions about how Hollywood really works, and I answer them. No celebrity is safe. With me this week, by special request, is co-host Baby Vegas.
Why, hello.
Why, hello.
Thanks for having me back.
He literally is here by special request. He's actually going to be answering one of your questions later on in the show. It was a question about Baby Vegas.
Oh, my God.
I know. Please don't encourage him. Why do people do this? Also later in the show, secrets of the brand new American Horror Story opening credits, starring the guy who made them. I tracked him down. I reveal what the hell I was doing in Jamaica, finally. Turns out learning that a new horror franchise is coming to movie theaters, supposedly, in the next couple of years. And in the process of learning this, I learned a little bit more about the inner workings of how films are made, and I think it's going to be pretty interesting. Plus, your questions answered on possible Facebook celebrity shenanigans and what might happen to these people who keep hacking and leaking and hacking and leaking and hacking and leaking the nude celebrity photos every week. As a matter of fact, let's get to that. Yeah, let's get to that question right now. Oh, and at the end of the show, if we have time, cage match.
Can't wait.
Oh,
I'm
yeah.
Ready.
Go ahead and read this question. It's a rant.
All right. Carolyn G. asks, or rants rather, regarding this whole horrible nude photo hack, when they catch the shitbag who violated the privacy of so many female celebrities, will he likely be charged for the entire leak at once? Say, a class action suit from an army of badass angry ladies? Or can each actress take legal action individually? I'd love for this guy to get 10 years stacked for each lady he violated, except he'd roll up to jail and get bro hugs and fist bumps, no doubt. Fuck this guy and everyone who posted links under the guise of news. They are not journalists. And fuck everyone who thinks it's the woman's fault for taking private, intimate pics in the first place. Victim blaming is never acceptable.
Agreed. But first of all, you say the shitbag.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, let's start off with that.
Mm-hmm.
First of all, we're probably looking at many shitbags of different flavors, manners, and class. We're looking at leaking shitbags mm-hmm. who are not the same as the hacker shitbags. And you should know that the shitbag who hacked one account may not be the same said shitbag who hacked another account, who may not be the same leaker from another account, who may not be the same, da, 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 okay? There's a loose collective of people out here doing this. That's the first thing you need to know. You should also know that we're talking about more than, at this point, 100 alleged victims. Because every week a new naked photo comes out, which makes this case even more complicated.
Wow.
We already know about J-Law and Kate Upton and Rihanna, but the latest, there's always a new list. The very latest victims consist of, allegedly, a Victoria's Secret model, Erin Heatherton, actress Winona Ryder, go figure, Annalyn McCord right. from 90210, and the first male victim in it, reality star Nick Hogan, son of Hulk Hogan, and bunches of like commercial actors you may or may not have even heard of. The biggest victims
like
seem to
Flo.
Be the Vampire Diaries. What?
Like Flo, the progressive lady?
You would love that. That's in your dreams.
Yes, every night.
But you get a discount during the lawsuit. The Vampire Diaries, Nina Dobrev, apparently with 147 personal images, but all fully clothed. So, okay. Now, you should also know that a bunch of these women are already taking legal action, not criminally, of course, but civilly, via, of course, we have talked about him, Marty Singer, the shark of sharks, the land shark of Los Angeles, probably one of the most aggressive lawyers to the stars there is.
Wow.
He's got reportedly Lawrence Upton and Rihanna as clients, along with Gabrielle Union. Or is Gabrielle Union one of them? Maybe not. Definitely Rihanna, Upton, and Lawrence. Mm. All right. And he's already threatened to sue Google for $100 million for just making the images searchable.
What
so,
do you mean?
Like, you know, when you if you Google like naked Kate Upton leaked photo, Google search, it may come up in a Google search. And he's trying to say, take them down, make them less searchable, or you are just as culpable. You are making millions off of this. And Google, apparently the nerds are trying. they're working on it.
Right, because isn't it, if so many people Google search Naked Kate Upton, then it just becomes something that pops up.
It does, unless it violates certain rules. Mm. For example, if you can claim copyright, you know, then they will work on, you know, taking it down. If you can claim that it goes against one of their many whatever terms right. of service, you can have it taken down. So from what I understand, they are working on trying to make those images less findable on the internet. So there are legal actions that are already being taken so far. Now, let's talk about the criminal possibilities.
Yes, please.
The identity of these people are still unknown. All right. Mm-hmm. But given previous celebrity hacking cases, including the ones that Caroline G asked about, mm-hmm. we could be looking at a lot of time. Okay. Whoa. Hacking charges alone can carry a maximum sentence of 20 years in prison. And to answer your question, wow. that's for each count. You know what 20 times 100 is? You die before your sentence is over.
Wow.
And then your children die before the sentence is
over.
You're
really going to need those pictures when you're in jail that long.
Right. So, what?
To keep yourself company.
You're a freak. All right. And it doesn't end there.
Mm-hmm.
Distributing child pornography may be a thing because one of the alleged victims was an Olympic gymnast. Who reportedly was underage when the photos were taken.
Yikes.
And that maximum sentence of up to 20 years in prison for each count. So you can see how this might stack nicely.
Right.
If you get the person. If you get the person. And also, let's remember, though, it's not a person. It's people.
Right.
It's shitbags, plural.
Mm-hmm.
Keep that in mind. Now, several things will come into play. When mm-hmm. we finally catch said shitbags, how many other offenses have been done? Has right. the person made a plea deal? Has the person ever committed a crime before? Was this person a minor? How widely were these distributed? Dollar value of damage caused? The point I'm trying to make is that there are so many factors in play.
Right.
But right now it's hard to tell. But know this, if even one shitbag is caught, there could be 20 years of that shitbag in a shitty jail.
Wow.
All right. Does that make you happy?
These stupid idiots,
just in this past March, a mm-hmm. guy was sentenced to only 18 months after pleading guilty to hacking the computers of several women, including former Miss Teen USA. So don't walk around telling your friends that, oh, these shitbags are each going to get 20 years. They may get 18 months, but they will probably be looking at some jail time unless things are really minor. Unless they did, they've never committed a crime before and they're really wealthy and they're white and, you know, all these things that help you stay out of jail.
Mm-hmm.
All right. Now, before I go any further with another reader question,
mm-hmm.
you've seen the opening credits by now for season 4 of American Horror Story. Have you seen them?
I have. That's all I can watch of American Horror Story is the credits.
Have you seen the titles for season 4?
Yeah.
With the little dancing figures and the clown head spinning around and the lady with the third leg and the very interesting place and the yeah. the shadow of a Ferris wheel, all those things.
Uh-huh.
And the creepy music and the balloon man and all that, right?
Disgustingly beautiful.
Disgustingly beautiful is an excellent way to put it. I'm going to link to it actually on my blog. I think I'm going to post the YouTube video of it as the visual for my push post to this blog. I think I'm going to do that. It's brilliant. And yesterday, I interviewed the creator of those opening titles, Kyle Cooper of Prologue. They're a Venice-based company. And Cooper has made, get this, 250 sets of opening titles. Mission Impossible, the Tom Cruise, Mission Impossible, Spider-Man.
I guess she's like
Ninja Turtles, tons and tons. Remember how, I don't know if you've ever seen the movie Seven. You may have been
yes,
in high school.
A long time ago.
Yeah. Though. Those, I still remember them to this day that when I saw that movie, they were some of the most disturbing opening credits I've ever seen. He did them. So he knows of what he does, if I may blunder that line.
Go Kyle Cooper.
All right. So I pinned him down and I asked him, mm-hmm. I actually made him break it down shot by shot of how he did it. I'm going to link to that on my blog so you can see it for yourself. But let me give you some other little details that didn't make the Yahoo article.
Yeah.
Because that's your reward for listening to my show. Ever wonder how much it takes to do opening titles? How about $1 million?
Whoa.
He says that he has made opening titles for $4,000 and he has made them for $950,000 or more.
Oh my gosh.
Yes. And you know how long it takes to do that? How about 10 weeks?
Oh my gosh.
Which is longer than some movie shoots.
Yeah, that's more money and longer than
some movie shoots. I mean, the typical movie shoot, from what I recall, is like, I mean, if we're not talking about Star Trek or anything, we're talking 6 weeks.
Yeah.
So these things are involved, people. It's an art. As a matter of fact, the Emmys even recognize them as an art. The first two American Horror Story opening titles were nominated for an Emmy. Mm-hmm. And then oddly, the third one, the Coven one, was not, which I find odd because I found some of those images to be incredibly cool, cooler than a lot of other ones.
Right.
And it'll be interesting to see whether this one is nominated
but
for an Emmy.
But they never
won. One other thing, and I'm trying to go after this because I think it would be great. There's a deleted scene that never made it in there. Oh. And absolute fans of American Horror Story will be interested to hear about what that scene was.
Oh,
it was
yeah.
a shot of babies in formaldehyde, like dead babies in formaldehyde, dancing in formaldehyde.
For what season is this?
For this fourth season. And it was a nod to the first season credit openers.
Yeah, yeah.
But it didn't make the final cut. Ryan Murphy said it didn't have this, you know, he didn't want it in there. So they took it out.
People love these opening credits. When I remember seeing on social media when these credits were released that, the attitude is the credits are always stellar.
Mm-hmm.
It's the show that eventually doesn't stack up.
You know what? And that's a good comfort. No matter how many episodes of American Horror Story I watch starting tonight, I have one guarantee. The opening titles will never, ever, ever suck mm-hmm. as badly as the last third of the season itself. Anyway, if you want to find out any more details about how these things work, I find them fascinating.
Yeah.
For example, some of those little figures were actually never real to begin with. Some of them were actually made completely in a 3D environment and then dropped onto a practical background.
Uh-huh.
Others were rented from a guy in Oklahoma. The Ferris wheel was like a toy Ferris wheel that was too modern. It looked too modern, but he only wanted the shadow.
Uh-huh.
So you only saw the shadow.
Oh.
The sand is a mixture of kitty litter and sand. It was too grainy at first, so they had to do a mixture.
Oh my gosh, I love it.
I love stuff like that. I know you do too, because you want to be a behind the scenes guy too.
I do. I want to be in that writer's room.
And if you value this kind of information, check out my blog. You will get more. Now, next question.
All right, Justin S. asks via Twitter.
What?
A lot of the Facebook trending topics reek of publicists to me. Are they for sale?
Well, all right. I ask Facebook for what it's worth.
What does this mean exactly? This means
if you get up on Facebook and you see, I think it's in the right-hand column, you'll see trending.
Right.
And it'll be, Ebola and, whatever. But lots of times it'll be like Lindsay Lohan or something,
right.
It'll be something.
Lately it was Ben Affleck yells at.
Yes. At Bill Maher.
Uh-huh.
And that's a good example because if you're a connected enough publicist, wouldn't you, or a savvy enough publicist, that would be an incredibly good coup to get onto that. So the best I can do as a reporter is to ask Facebook because if there's some sort of underground secret conspiracy about trending topics, I'm not the person who's going to know about it. All right. Of the, five people may know otherwise. I don't know any of those five people, but I did get in touch with Facebook, which says that the trending topics are not for sale. They say that they're picked by algorithm, but then the editorial, like what actually is said about the trending topic, they have an edit team that does that.
Mm.
And that no one can pay or determine. Publishers cannot determine what makes a trending topic.
Okay.
So apparently it's Elliot Ness untouchable. But Facebook. So if you see me putting up air quotes, even though you can only hear me.
We can see them in your voice.
Yes, you can. You can see them in my voice. Aren't you adorable?
Mm.
All right. What are we ready for now? Jeez. You want to do the next one?
Yeah.
And then finally, after that, I'll talk about Jamaica.
Yeah.
And then
please.
We'll do our cage match, right? So go ahead.
All right. Anonymous.
Oh, this is for you.
Oh.
This is your question. Oh. It's time to shine. Sorry. Sparkle
my time
on.
Time is here.
Somebody actually wrote a question about Baby Vegas. Now, before I get started on this, you should know Baby Vegas, not a celebrity. Even in his
not
little
yet.
Pinhead. Never, ever, ever. But you asked. I answer. Go ahead.
And now you shall receive.
Go ahead.
All right, Anonymous asks via the Femme Fatale website.
What?
I've always wondered, Living in LA is very expensive. How does Baby Vegas make a living? Wearing gold pants and dancing around pays that well?
Go ahead. Explain.
I have
Do you get paid to go-go
so
dance?
So many hats.
When you go-go dance with your ass out on Instagram, do you get paid for that? Yes or no? Quick question. Yes or no?
No.
Do you get paid?
All for the love of dance.
Okay. So what else do you do? You do gay dodgeball. Do you get paid for gay dodgeball?
Nope. You have to pay for dodgeball.
You did not get paid to wear the gold pants.
I did not.
Okay.
I got paid in compliments by Maya Rudolph. But
who never ever hollered back at you, by the way.
I know, right?
Hooker. All right. So how do you make a living then? This is hilarious.
Well, I work in the very fascinating, tedious world of organizing commercials to be broadcast for air for NBC.
Yeah, that's how we met, actually, is when I first had my podcast on at E, which was part of the NBC family. And I don't know how this orphan child just came into my studio and was like, hi. Isn't that what happened? Didn't you just like find your way in there? And I'm like, all right. Like, I just took one look at him. I'm like, you're Baby Vegas, get in the booth.
Well, I had been here for 2 months, and my friend Steven, who I met through this totally random job that I got.
Yeah, his nickname is Big City. Yes.
Big City. Had no idea what this was. I had no idea that anyone had involvement with organizing commercials. Really a TV writer aspiring to be paid as such.
Mm-hmm.
And a dancer and a yogi. And he was like, hey, I think you'd really love this. Our friend Andy, the original
producer
of your show, they were great friends. And then the rest was history. So you've known me longer than almost anyone else in my family in LA.
Wow.
Yeah.
You're like my son.
I pretty much am.
That I never wanted. Now, let
but
me ask
we'll
you
never
this.
Go away.
I think that, can you tell people, this is very interesting. Mm-hmm. I think that I've always been curious about how commercials are organized.
Yeah.
Can you give sort of a brief synopsis about like for Super Bowl, okay?
Uh-huh.
Super Bowl or the Olympics, where there's a lot of money, you know, going around. How do the commercials get picked and how do they get placed?
The amount of money that is attached to this stuff is wild. For the Olympics was insane. We were responsible for like $1 million spots. And basically you're sitting in front of a computer program making the most expensive puzzle you've ever seen in your entire life. So Coke is a half hour from Coke, not in the same break as Pepsi. It's so simple, but pretty much explains exactly what we do. And then if it's something huge like the Olympics or the Super Bowl, there are an endless list of stipulations and things that, like, this commercial needs to come directly out of the segment break because in the segment they're going to talk about Coke. So we want the Coke to be right there. Coke, Coke, Coke. It's crazy. There's hundreds of people that are involved with just any network, any single network that obviously all broadcast commercials.
What are some of the other stipulations? It's like, is there anybody that's like has a beef with another brand and they're like, I don't want Campbell's soup next to Lipton under any conditions?
Maybe not so dramatic as that, but there's definitely like competing movies. Movies are like the biggest thing. And if you have to put competing movies, you better make sure that they have nothing to do with each other. So terribly scary movie is in the same break as like happy child film that you're not going to happen to choose. They're not competing with each other in your brain.
And do companies pay more or less to be broadcast like as the third commercial versus the fourth in a break?
Oh, yeah.
Really?
Sometimes it gets as crazy and complicated as that.
So then why, I don't mean to be bitchy about this, but then why do they need a traffic person if so much of it is predetermined by what they pay for?
Because you still have to, like, an individual human being still has to organize and place this stuff. Thank God the machines haven't taken over yet.
Are you literally dragging and dropping commercials?
Oh, yeah.
Wow.
That's not so much what I do anymore. Now I deal with lots of different people and keeping all the pieces in line by talking to 10 different people all day long, which shakes things up. But also, money talks, and everyone has so much money. But everybody else has so much money. So this person's money thinks that their money is more important than the other person's money, all for a 30-second spot.
So a lot of it is about relationships, I guess. If Coke has a better relationship with NBC than Pepsi, but they're both spending $20 million on an ad, they'll slide in Coke where they want and not Pepsi?
Essentially, yeah. So as long as your salesperson fights for you the hardest, pretty much. Yeah, there's a lot of politics in it.
Do you ever get a lot of pressure from salespeople or whatever to...
Oh my God, all the time. There's like very contentious love-hate relationship between the commercial operations coordinators and sales.
Have you ever gotten in trouble?
No, actually. We do really... We're actually very good at our jobs, which is great. But we're sort of like Gosford Park. We're beneath the floors. We're the ones that make everything go around. And
you're the downstairs.
We're
mates.
The downstairs. And sales gets to hobnob and go to lunch and do this and that. And we're shackled to our desks taking 30-second whims.
You're the backstage rat at the theater.
Absolutely. There's plenty of other things I'd rather not be doing. So
now, do you happen to know for like a major, major event like the Super Bowl,
mm-hmm.
I would imagine that every single commercial is predetermined and like dictated to the traffic person.
Oh yeah. There is not.
The traffic person is not there flash dancing where these commercials go.
No. You're pretty much, you're following orders and everything is
you get a list
rehearsal.
Basically, don't you?
Oh yeah, pretty much. They tell you where to go. There's not some random filler on something as huge as the Super Bowl.
Here's my real final question.
Yeah.
If there's a news break, if something goes into overtime, if something changes, is there like a person who's always there?
Oh, see, this is the thing. There's hundreds of people involved with this. And that's not my department, but there is network. There's people that are there literally 24 hours a day.
Just in case.
They're cycle. Not that same person, obviously. But
so if there's like an Ebola outbreak and there's a huge news break and then your commercials don't go through.
Right. Then there's people there. Luckily on E! We're not really broadcasting Ebola outbreaks.
Yeah, wait till Ryan Seacrest gets it. Then we'll see.
Well, when celebrities die, even if they're not our own celebrities.
That's the name of the next E! Special. Ebola, when celebrities die.
Yeah.
Now.
Let's take that to development.
I hope you found that fascinating because I know Baby Vegas did. Now, I went to Jamaica.
Yeah.
Okay. I went to Jamaica and I couldn't talk about it until now. Because the news that I was going to Jamaica to cover was embargoed. For those of you who are not familiar with news embargoes, it works like this. You agree to get a piece of information in advance if all of the reporters involved promise not to reveal it until X date at X time.
Did you have to sign an NDA?
I didn't.
No.
I didn't. But I have been asked to sign some NDAs in the past.
Mm.
Lots of reporters won't sign them. I usually don't sign them.
Oh,
it's an honor system.
Yeah.
Whereas if the next time, if I violate the embargo, don't invite me next time.
Right.
And it rarely happens.
Right.
So as it turns out, this is the announcement.
Yeah.
Jeffrey Reddick is the creator of the Final Destination series, that insanely lucrative teenager dying series.
Mm-hmm.
It otherwise known as 1001 Ways to Kill a Teenager. And he's done very well for himself.
Mm-hmm.
He was in Jamaica announcing a new project, a three-picture franchise inspired by the real-life legend called The White Witch of Rose Hall. Rose Hall is in Jamaica. It's an old plantation from, I think, the 19th century. There, and it's a real plantation where he made the announcement.
Uh-huh.
And I actually took a tour and everything.
Spooky.
Supposedly haunted, supposedly voodoo, supposedly yada yada. Not a lot of historical support, but the local legend goes that there was an evil white lady slave owner who killed three husbands there.
Whoa.
And tortured her 2,000 slaves in a dungeon.
Yikes.
So there was this, and so there's going to be, they say they want to make three movies about this. They've got, financiers lined up. The owner of the Rose Hall Estate is involved, which is very interesting. The story has been locked. And one of the women involved in selling this used to work a lot with Lionsgate selling horror franchises. She can like sell them in her sleep. This is what's interesting. Then usually when somebody announces a new film franchise, you have more, you're further along in the process. You're in pre-production. You have started shooting. You have a cast. You have a director. The script is locked down. You have a release date. Something.
Right.
Something. Here, it was very early on. They have the story locked down for three movies, but they have not locked the script. Director is TBD. Cast is TBD. But they want to shoot starting next year.
Whoa.
In Jamaica. and at least partially at Rose Hall Estate. The most interesting detail to me are, again, the numbers.
Mm-hmm.
They say they want to cast A-list talent. Now, for the record, these days, A-list talent can charge about $10 million a picture. All right?
Dang.
Anywhere between 5 and 15, depending on points and who you are and yada yada. However, they want to make each one of these movies for around $20 million. Do the math.
Right.
Doesn't quite seem doable. So I asked them about that. It's going to be interesting. They say that this story is very different. Off the record, people were calling it like 12 Years a Slave meets Serpent and the Rainbow.
Wow.
So apparently the parts are going to be very meaty, something that an actor would want to sink her teeth into. In other words, something where an actor may take a pay cut to do the part. So we'll see. I don't want to say I'm skeptical, but a lot of those puzzle pieces usually don't end up fitting down the road. Horror movies in general are not Oscar type bait movies. Right. Actors in general do horror for the money, or because they're young and they need to keep working, or they want to work with a certain director or a certain actor. They don't do it for the acting chops.
Right.
So this will be very intriguing. I also took some pictures of Rose Hall.
Oh.
It's feckin' scary.
Really?
Yeah, maybe I'll put a few pictures up on my blog. What do you think?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Please.
I took a night tour. It was very interesting. And Jamaica itself is crazy interesting.
Yeah.
This is the other interesting piece, and this is the last piece I'll mention. They don't have any tax incentives for filmmakers the way that Vancouver does, the way that North Carolina does, the way that Atlanta does.
Right.
And again, $20 million budget, and you want to shoot in Jamaica where they don't have tax incentives.
And you got to get everything there.
Right.
Hmm.
I'm more intrigued than anything else. I want to see how it all comes together.
Yeah.
I think it's going to be an interesting study in how a medium budget movie is made, because that's considered a medium budget movie.
Yeah.
Usually medium budget movies with A-list stars,
right,
such as Argo, for example, which I think was somewhere between 20 and 50 million. The reason why they got A-list talent is because it was a passion project for Ben Affleck. Okay. And also, you know, it became an Oscar play.
Right.
So people take pay cuts. Same thing with Wolf of Wall Street. You know, Leo DiCaprio got a nice paycheck, but his second in command, right, did not. Jonah Hill took like, what did he say, 30 grand or something?
Right.
Because he wanted to be in that movie and because it's a good meaty role. It's Scorsese and it's an Oscar play.
Right.
But will actors take a pay cut for this horror movie? A-list actors? We'll see. Yeah. I really want to see. I want to find out. I'm genuinely curious. I'm not bitchy about it. I'm not totally skeptical. I'm not cynical. I am very genuinely curious. And I will be bringing you more updates as we progress. Finally, do we have a minute or two for the cage match? Yes. We have a cage match. We haven't done one in a while.
I know.
You know I'm going to win.
I know.
Because I always win. Go ahead and go first.
I was at brunch in Silver Lake at this place called The Cliff's Edge. Beautiful spot. Check it out. And
You're burning time.
Having brunch with my friend, and she didn't tell me until we left and we're out of the building, out of sight of our table, that the whole time behind us, Katherine Heigl was sitting with no makeup.
And she didn't...
She didn't think to share it with me.
Why?
She just rubbed it in my face that I missed it.
She rubbed Katherine Heigl in your face. All right. Well, when I was flying to Jamaica, you know how you walk through a plane cabin and you board the plane and you walk through first class and then you sit in your crappy seat in the back.
Uh-huh.
As I'm passing first class, I see a tiny Latina woman, tiny, tiny Latina woman, but really hot and in makeup. And she's cozied up in one of those blankets that they give you in first class, but that they deny you back in the cattle.
You're right.
It was Eva Longoria.
Oh.
And the guy next to her looked like some sort of security dude of some kind of stunt dude, security dude. He had some sort of t-shirt that I could have sworn said security on it, and I could have sworn he was talking about security.
Was he on the aisle?
He was on the aisle.
Mm.
She was at the window. Mm-hmm. Makes sense. Also was kind of sleepy. This was a red eye.
Oh, okay.
So I was boarding at like 11 o'clock midnight, something like that. So stars, they're sleepy just like us. Thank you so much for joining us. This has been another edition of my show. JJ, where can they reach me?
They can find you on Twitter at Fame Fatale Says.
Right.
They can find you on Facebook, The Femme Fatale.
Right.
They can find you online.
Yes.
TheFemmeFatale.com.
And now on Instagram.
That's right.
At Femme Fatale Says.
Yay.
Yeah, that's right.
We're happy you're there.
Or, of course, you can always email me if you're old like myself at Leslie@TheFemmeFatale.com. Now, Baby Vegas, if anyone else has any more questions about you, please don't ask them. But if they do, where can they reach him?
They can tweet me on Twitter at Baby Vegas with a Z.
We will see you next week.